A very loud State of the Union broken down. We take a look back into the past of Joe Biden to see whether or not his feisty personality is something that America rewards or punishes. It's all coming up.
This is made possible by Oh Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, V, and Craig.
Welcome, everybody, to the Politics, Politics, Politics program for Friday, March 8th, 2024. Your old pal, Justin Robert Young, joining you from Austin, Texas. And we're a little late today for a few different reasons. Number one, my MacBook totally blew up, so we had to do a little bit of juggling yesterday. Got a new machine here, very, very excited, but also I wanted to really break down this State of the Union because it obviously meant a lot to the Biden administration, to the Biden 2024 campaign. And so I wanted to take it seriously. I wanted there to be some kind of a real breakdown on it. My top line. This was more Joe Biden's Philadelphia speech, where he talked about ultra MAGA, than it was 2020, folks be real, soul of the nation, Biden. Now, he's speaking to different audiences. And in a lot of ways, this felt like him trying to stamp out problems in his own coalition more so than it was to reach out across to Republicans. So this is far more to excite people who might be upset at him about little things on the Democratic side than it was, say, to reach out to Nikki Haley voters. It certainly was not looking to take any kind of responsibility for reaching out to anybody who might consider themselves a Donald Trump voter. This was a rally around the base affair. I think that Biden had very, very good moments. I think that Biden had very weak moments. Look, he's an old dude. And between the slurring and the coughing, the base doesn't care because they saw energy and that's what they wanted. I wonder if there's going to be an accumulation. Remember, we're at the beginning of this race. We're not at the end. But I got a lot of notes here and I got a lot of clips. So let's go ahead and start with this. This was a good moment. Started off with a joke. This is Joe Biden opening up his State of the Union.
Good evening. Good evening. If I were smart, I'd go home now.
He keeps on going with this. Now, look, that's good. Joke. Joe Biden's a funny guy. You know, the superpower of Joe Biden is that he is that dude that lived in the Senate forever. He's a good grinner. He's a good handshaker. He's a good backslapper. He was so happy after this speech that I believe somebody said online he spent 45 minutes kibitzing around the house, just talking to anybody who wanted to talk to him. He loves this stuff. But this is the duality. So he starts out with a good joke, you know, Speaker Mike Johnson smiling behind him. And then we go right into this. Just in case you were wondering, the stakes that Joe Biden wants to set this election on, he left nothing to the imagination with the opening of his State of the Union.
Mr. Speaker, Madam Vice President, members of Congress, my fellow Americans, in January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation, and he said, I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Hitler was on the march. War was raging in Europe. President Roosevelt's purpose was to wake up Congress and alert the American people that this was no ordinary time. Freedom and democracy were under assault in the world. Tonight, I come to this same chamber to address the nation. Now, it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union. And yes, my purpose tonight is to wake up the Congress and alert the American people that this is no ordinary moment either.
Okay, so we have a comparison between Joe Biden and FDR and our modern international landscape with Hitler, the new Hitler being Putin. And we need to wake up the modern Congress. He is FDR, Putin is Hitler, and this is the opening salvo, right? Big stakes, but wait, there's more.
Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is the freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time.
So Joe Biden is FDR and Lincoln. And right now, this election is so important because it is World War II and the Civil War at the same time. You cannot blame Joe Biden for not spelling out the stakes of this election from his own perspective. This is World War II and the Civil War. That's how he starts, right? The one thing I always say about political messaging, and the reason why I pay attention to stuff like this so closely, is because you know that these messages have been thought about the most. You know, there's an old saying in basketball, you want to know how good a coach is? Look at how good their plays are coming out of timeouts, because that's when you see the fruit of the labor of working with people over and over and over again. And the hits went from there. Donald Trump being, Joe Biden saying Donald Trump is telling the new Hitler to do whatever the hell you want. This from a Trump speech. I think that quote is a little bit taken out of context. That was Trump saying to NATO allies back when he was president that they needed to pay up because NATO was not a charity. But still, it is very, very effective for Joe Biden. He uses it there. I have here, these are my contemporaneous notes. Biden is trying to be forceful, but he is reading angry. Now, in looking at some of the reaction to this, there is a core element of his base that desperately loved this. They really, really did. They were super jacked about Joe Biden being angry, yelling at their enemies. And it's Trumpian, right? It doesn't matter whether or not you think this guy is perfect. As long as he is a weapon toward your enemies, you are excited about it. He called January 6th a dagger to the throat of American democracy. I've tried not to read a lot of reaction to this because I wanted to keep my opinions pure, but I did have a chance to read Semaphore's Dave Weigel. And his reporting on this is that Democrats want to shake America out of what they refer to as Trump amnesia. The idea that they remember the economy good and memories have faded about some of the chaos. And so what they wanted to do was bring every wart that they could into very stark relief. And so calling January 6th a dagger to the throat of American democracy, well, that gets you there. Obviously, this is very much a campaign speech. Biden, quote, guarantee the right to IVF, guarantee it nationwide. This is a current issue that is happening in the Senate. And it is at this point that I will point out that the Democrats throughout this process were loud. It was clear through the Democratic establishment that they had to set the optics. They could not sit on their hands. They could not be tepid. They had to react like Biden was Bruce Springsteen at every single pause. This was not a particularly long speech, and it still topped out around average, largely because of the applause breaks. It was most periods and some commas, if you just looked at the speech. Let's get to this clip, because I think it is emblematic of the Biden question. And that is Joe Biden saying women are not without electoral power. This is a huge issue. I've said repeatedly that women's health specifically and Roe versus Wade on top of that are the biggest power punches that Biden has in this election. And yet he's got a little trouble getting it out. Let's play the clip.
Look, many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away? Look, it's a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court majority wrote the following, and with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral power. Electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you get right about that. Clearly. Clearly. Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women. But they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot, we won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024.
So that cough there at the end, that was something that was persistent throughout the speech. We get a first big heckle of liar during the COVID portion of this, coming from one of the Republican congressmen. I have written down here, Biden is persistently coughing, and then the cough is going to be a story. I don't think that I was right about it. I think that the cough is certainly something that Donald Trump seized on. He was on Truth Social. Legendary germaphobe Donald Trump was on Truth Social saying, don't shake his hand. He's been coughing into it for the last 30 minutes. And I have written down here that this was a white knuckle speech. Joe Biden was on one. The funniest joke that I saw on Twitter was that this was a speech written in all caps. In fact, to my knowledge, and we're going to play one of the clips, there were only two times where he modulated from very forceful, what I would describe as outdoor campaign voice, which in a State of the Union, which normally has the ability to modulate a little bit more, is a choice, right? He only did it twice. Once in telling a story about his meeting a bunch of business leaders, and another time when he talked about Israel. We're going to play the Israel one. Here's a good moment for Biden. And again, his superpower being able to be the Senate backslapper. He was talking about his infrastructure legislation. And you know, in another version of this speech, he is selling the fruits of why it was important to leave Trumpism behind. That's another version of this. We, the American people, made the decision to leave Trumpism in the past. And when we did, here's what we got. Roads, bridges, common sense gun legislation, funding the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, although he's not going to say that. Now, it's so funny now that inflation was obviously not impacted by that at all. They don't even refer to that by its name. They just say it was what it really was, which was a green energy bill. Anyway, in another version, this is more of a cornerstone. In the speech we got last night, it was this little quip here.
And thanks to our bipartisan infrastructure law, 46,000 new projects have been announced all across your communities. And by the way, I noticed some of you have strongly voted against it, or they're cheering on that money coming in. I like it. I'm with you. I'm with you. If any of you don't want that money in your district, just let me know.
There we go. That is that's a good line. It's a good line. Biden loves stuff like that. He loves doing that. Here in my notes, this speech is very political and very partisan. Not a lot of bipartisan moments. And that it's these speeches are always kind of campaign speeches on some level, but usually they're not candidate campaign speeches. And if I can draw the distinction here for a second, when you're the president, you want to act like the president. You want to act above it all. You want to say, here's how I'm running it. It's going great. You're not on the attack. You are more like what he was there, which is like, hey, we passed a thing. If you don't want the money, let me know. That's more the tone. But he was extraordinarily combative, not only with the Republican contingent, but also in general, you usually give these moments of bipartisan unity a chance to breathe. You like those optics. You want the president, especially in a divided country, to say a thing and then everybody gets up and claps regardless. Oftentimes these moments are, and we have the best military in the world. Yay. The American economy is the engine that powers the world. Yay. That kind of stuff. Not as much of it here. We have a gaffe. Biden added Moscow to the list of places where you can buy cheaper drugs. The idea being that he has capped insulin. But Moscow is not on his list of favorite places these days. Biden mentioned the word predecessor. He never said the T word. He never said Trump. But he said predecessor 13 times in this speech. That's a lot. And again, we're in uncharted waters in modern political history. You don't usually have an ex-president run against the current president to see whether or not you're going to serve two non-consecutive terms. So, you know, I don't think that there's a lot to kind of like slap anybody on the wrist based on basic political calculus. But it is interesting to have your candidate, your rival candidate's name in your mouth quite as much as Biden did in this speech. Just to show you exactly how much of a campaign speech this was, we got to like call and response. Let's take a listen.
Here's the deal. The last administration enacted a $2 trillion tax cut, overwhelmingly benefit the top 1%, the very wealthy and the biggest corporation, and exploded the federal deficit. They added more to the national debt than any presidential term in American history. Check the numbers. Folks at home, does anybody really think the tax code is fair? Do you really think the wealthy and big corporations need another $2 trillion tax break? No! I sure don't. I'm going to keep fighting like hell to make it fair. Under my plan, nobody earning less than $400,000 a year will pay an additional penny in federal taxes. Nobody, not one penny.
I mean, I can't remember the last time that we heard call and response. Now, oftentimes these are far more state affairs. Maybe I am forgetting, but if you want to look at some of the hallmarks, the rhetorical hallmarks that separate something like a State of the Union from a convention speech, that would be among them. Very common during a convention speech to say, do you think, yeah, what about deep drop doop? No, that kind of stuff. And yet we see it here. Pretty wild. Biden starts taunting the Republicans when he brings up immigration. Obviously, Republicans believe that the border is a huge strength for them. And if they are going to win this race, it is going to be because people are more focused on things like the economy and the border than the weaknesses on the Republican side, like Roe. Biden has a little bit of a taunt. Says, oh, you don't like that bill, huh? You know, I know you know how to read. But then comes an unscripted moment. We know it's unscripted because the White House releases this State of the Union speech beforehand. On the way into the chamber, none other than Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, wearing a red jacket and a Make America Great Again hat, hands Joe Biden a pin bearing the name of Laken Riley. Laken Riley was a nursing student in the University of Georgia. She was attending a school adjacent to the University of Georgia, and she was murdered while she was out on a run. This was at the hands of a man that crossed into the United States illegally, had been detained by local law enforcement in New York before he made his way to Athens, and now awaits murder charges. So as Biden is going on about the border, we have this exchange where Marjorie Taylor Greene, who handed Joe Biden the button, starts yelling. We're going to play. This is a fattier clip. This is about 4 minutes, but we're going to play it in context so you know exactly what happened here.
In November, my team began serious negotiations with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing. That bipartisan bill would hire 1,500 more security agents and officers, 100 more immigration judges to help tackle the backload of 2 million cases, 4,300 more asylum officers, and new policies so they can resolve cases in 6 months instead of 6 years now. What are you against? $100 more high-tech drug detection machines to significantly increase the ability to screen and stop vehicles smuggling fentanyl into America. That's killing thousands of children. This bill would save lives and bring order to the border. It would also give me and any new president new emergency authority to temporarily shut down the border when the number of migrants at the border is overwhelming. The Border Patrol Union has endorsed this bill. The Federal Chamber of Commerce is, yeah. You're saying low. Look at the facts. I know you know how to read. I believe that given the opportunity for a majority in the House and Senate would endorse the bill as well, a majority right now. But unfortunately, politics has derailed this bill so far. I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels political win, he viewed it as would be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner. Not really. Laken Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals? To her parents, I say, my heart goes out to you, having lost children myself. I understand. But look, if we change the dynamic at the border, people pay these smugglers $8,000 to get across the border because they know if they get by and let into the country, it's 6 to 8 years before they have a hearing. and it's worth taking the chance of the $8,000. But if it's only 6 weeks, the idea is it's highly unlikely that people will pay that money and come all that way knowing that they'll be able to be kicked out quickly. Folks, I would respectfully suggest my Republican friends owe it to the American people, get this bill done. We need to act now. And if my predecessor is watching, instead of paying politics and pressuring members of Congress to block the bill, join me in telling the Congress to pass it. We can do it together.
There we go. That is the immigration portion. Pretty intense, I will say. There is going to be a line for Biden on how much he is able to muddy the waters here versus hurt himself by denying the facts as voters understand them. When he talks about the backlog of asylum seekers, there is an element of the, I think you should leave, we're all looking for the person who did this. But he does want to make sure that this is not the number one issue. He needs to muddy it, and he's doing his best to do it. Of note, he used the term illegal. Lincoln Riley, he kind of self-styled as Lincoln. And let me just say this. For anybody who wants to discuss Joe Biden's pronunciation issues and slurring issues, just go ahead and run this speech through a translator, through a transcription program, because boy, do you get some really, really, really interesting results. That being said, when he calls for Lincoln Riley, that she was murdered by an illegal, he actually got pushback on his left flank, because that is something that Democrats do not say anymore. After all, we've all seen the signs. In this house, we believe science is real and no human is illegal. Well, according to the Democratic president of the United States, he's going back in time. Joe Biden did make a point to give Kamala her flowers. That's something that I think a lot of folks in her camp would probably be very excited about. He gave her credit for a bunch of different stuff. He did go back to whispering when he talked about Israel. So we're going to play here the entirety of his speech on Israel. Here's the reason why. This speech was designed to rally the base. Like we said before, he sure as hell wasn't reaching out to MAGA folks, and he definitely wasn't reaching out to the Nikki Haley voters. This was a one for the boys. This is the Democrats only. That's who he was speaking to with this. And the biggest problem he has right now on his left flank is Gaza. So this is everything that he said on that subject last night.
You know, as we manage challenges at home, we're also managing crises abroad, including in the Middle East. I know the last 5 months have been gut-wrenching for so many people, for the Israeli people, for the Palestinian people, and so many here in America. This crisis began on October 7th. With a massacre by a terrorist group called Hamas, as you all know. 1,200 innocent people, women and girls, men and boys, slaughtered after enduring sexual violence. The deadliest day for the Jewish people since the Holocaust. And 250 hostages taken. Here in this chamber tonight, our families whose loved ones are still being held by Hamas. I pledge to all the families that we will not rest until we bring every one of your loved ones home. We also
bipartisan applause.
We also work around the clock to bring home Evan and Paul, Americans being unjustly detained by the Russians. and others around the world. Israel has the right to go after Hamas. Hamas ended this conflict by releasing hostages, laying down arms, could end it by releasing the hostages, laying down arms, and surrendering those responsible for October 7th. But Israel has a added burden because Hamas hides and operates among the civilian population like cowards, under hospitals, daycare centers, and all the like. Israel also has a fundamental responsibility, though, to protect innocent civilians in Gaza. This war has taken a greater toll on innocent civilians than all previous wars in Gaza combined. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are not Hamas. Thousands and thousands of innocents, women and children, girls and boys, also orphaned. Nearly 2 million more Palestinians under bombardment or displacement. Homes destroyed, neighbors in rubble, cities in ruin. Families without food, water, medicine. It's heartbreaking. I've been working nonstop to establish an immediate ceasefire that would last for 6 weeks to get all the prisoners released, all the hostages released, to get the hostages home and ease the intolerable and humanitarian crisis and build toward something more enduring. The United States has been leading international efforts to get more humanitarian assistance to Gaza. Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the coast of Gaza that can receive large shipments carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters. No U.S. boots will be on the ground. A temporary pier will enable a massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting into Gaza every day. And Israel must do its part. Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. And they're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. To the leadership of Israel, I say this. Humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority. As we look to the future, the only real solution to the situation is a two-state solution over time. And I say this as a lifelong supporter of Israel. My entire career, no one has a stronger record with Israel than I do. I challenge any of you here. I'm the only American president to visit Israel in wartime. But there is no other path that guarantees Israel's security and democracy. There is no other path that guarantees that Palestinians can live in peace with peace and dignity. And there's no other path that guarantees peace between Israel and all of its neighbors, including Saudi Arabia, with whom I'm talking. Creating stability in the Middle East also means containing the threat posed by Iran. That's why I built a coalition of more than a dozen countries to defend international shipping and freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. I've ordered strikes to degrade the Houthi capability and defend U.S. forces in the region. As Commander-in-Chief, I will not hesitate to direct further measures to protect our people and our military personnel.
There we go. Joe Biden, the full and complete remarks on Israel. The visuals there for folks who are only listening. Ilhan Omar with a stop sending bombs sign. They did not yell, but they did make themselves visually known. Rashida Tlaib also holding a lasting ceasefire now. This comes after the White House has started referring to their humanitarian pauses, what they called a negotiated stop to hostilities a few months ago. They are now calling ceasefires because they're like, oh, okay, you want a ceasefire? What people mean is a ceasefire, a full ceasefire, like the end of the war, that the United States will say, stop the war right now. But now that's a lasting ceasefire, we continue to play the word game. All right, We're going to do Biden's big finish here. It starts off strong for him. He does his power pitch again, horsing around with the Senate. This is the big ending.
Let me close with this. Yeah.
That is the Republican delegation.
I know you don't want to hear any more, Lindsey, but I got to say a few more things.
Referring to Lindsey Graham.
I know it may not look like it, but I've been around a while. When you get to be my age, certain things become clearer than ever. I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America into the future. My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy. A future based on core values that have defined America. Honesty, decency, dignity, equality. To respect everyone. To give everyone a fair shot, to give hate no safe harbor. Now other people my age see it differently. The American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution, that's not me. I was born amid World War II, when America stood for the freedom of the world. I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and Claymont, Delaware, among working-class people who built this country. I watched in horror as two of my heroes, like many of you did, Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy, were assassinated. And their legacies inspired me to pursue a career in service. I left the law firm and became a public defender because my city of Wilmington was the only city in America occupied by the National Guard after Dr. King was assassinated because of the riots. And I became a county councilman almost by accident. I got elected to the United States Senate when I had no intention of running at age 29. Then vice president of our first black president. Now president to the first women vice president. In my career, I've been told I was too young. By the way, they didn't let me on ascended elevators for votes sometimes. Not a joke. And I've been told I'm too old. Whether young or old, I've always known what endures. I've known our North Star. The very idea of America is that we're all created equal and deserves to be treated equally throughout our lives. We've never fully lived up to that idea. But we've never walked away from it either. And I won't walk away from it now. I'm optimistic. I really am. I'm optimistic, Nancy.
Looking at Nancy Pelosi.
My fellow Americans, the issue facing our nation isn't how old we are. It's how old are our ideas. Hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas that only take us back. You lead America, the land of possibilities. You need a vision for the future and what can and should be done. Tonight you've heard mine. I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms, not take them away. I see a future where the middle class finally has a fair shot, and the wealthy have to pay their fair share in taxes. I see a future where we save the planet from the climate crisis and our country from gun violence. Above all, I see a future for all Americans. I see a country for all Americans. And I will always be president for all Americans. Because I believe in America. I believe in you, the American people. You're the reason we've never been more optimistic about our future than I am now. So let's build the future together. Let's remember who we are. We are the United States of America. And there is nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we act together. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And with that, Joe Biden ended his State of the Union. This was Joe Biden the fighter. To those who thought that those days were behind him, it was a breath of fresh air. To those wondering why the man who said he'd heal the nation is now screaming at them, I'd have been a little confusing. Tactically, I believe that his team looked at this as a one-way street. The Biden 24 team believes that the issues are on their side. They just don't look like it yet. They believe that Roe is indeed on the ballot. They believe that they will eventually get credit for an economic soft landing. They believe that they can muddy the waters on the border enough that it won't be the number one issue by the time that November rolls around. And so they needed to start a party. Knock off all the bedwetting. Rally the troops. Was this a convention speech and not a State of the Union? Hell yeah. Because Joe's got the balls. And he's going to bring it home. It's a vision of Joe Biden that we have seen before. One that immediately brought to mind one night in 2012. We take a look back at Biden's VP debate with Paul Ryan after the break. This is your update, brought to you by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Guys, this week, the big deep dive into Super Tuesday, where we went state by state in every contest that had polling so we could compare the spreads of the most recent polls that came out versus what Donald Trump actually won by, or in one case, lost by, to see whether or not we should be taking seriously the idea that Donald Trump is underperforming his polls. All that happened. The deep dive on the PX3 Extra, the patron exclusive. And the reason why isn't because I want to keep anything from one or the other, but, you know, we got a lot of news, and we are going to be have a lot of news for the next, you know, 8 months. So if that's the case, and you want the news, and you trust my perspective on this kind of stuff, then there's only one solution. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 a week gets you two bonus episodes each and every week. Let's go ahead and get to some of the stories that we didn't get a chance to cover. Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona will not seek a second term. This ends her unique journey through Congress, one that began as an environmental activist, a member of the Green Party, eventually a Democratic legislator in Arizona, then a Democratic senator in the United States Senate, and ending with her having no party. This sets up a 1v1 of Ruben Gallego versus Republican Carrie Lake. A three-way race might have tilted this toward Carrie. Ruben Gallego will now be favored in that race. And the big thing to point out here is that the Democratic Party really came for its enemies. A reminder that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema were the two votes that stopped Joe Biden from notching many more progressive victories, including ending the filibuster. So both Manchin and Sinema are no longer going to be in the Senate. You know, it explains to you how rigid that party has become. TikTok has taken a bold step against a congressional bill that threatens to sever its ties with its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, potentially leading to a ban on the app in U.S. stores. The video sharing platform utilized its vast user base sending alerts to users to call their representatives, particularly targeting those whose House members were on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which is voting on the bill. This move marks a significant effort by TikTok to mobilize its audience against legislative actions perceived as a threat, reminiscent of previous successful campaigns by tech giants against Google and Wikipedia against copyright protection bills. This bill, aimed at addressing national security concerns tied to TikTok's connections to the Chinese Communist Party, demands ByteVest divest TikTok or face a ban, one that would be enforced through app stores and possibly through internet service providers. Despite TikTok's assertion of its autonomy from the CCP and its efforts to secure U.S. user data, bipartisan worries persist. The company's campaign results in mixed reactions from congressional offices, with some dismissing the effort and others taking the feedback seriously. TikTok did gain an ally today, though, as the former president of the United States and presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump wrote the following on Truth Social. Quote, if you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zucker schmuck will double their business. I don't want Facebook, who cheated in the last election, doing better. They are a true enemy of the people. So there we go. A man who once tried to ban TikTok himself and in many ways set the template for what TikTok now refers to as Project Texas, or a partnership with Oracle to store all United States data in the United States, now saying that TikTok should not be banned. Interesting. And one final moment that we did not talk about during Joe Biden's State of the Union speech was Steve Nicoy, the father of a Marine killed during the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. He was arrested for disrupting the State of the Union. Nicoy was invited by Representative Brian Mast of Florida and shouted Abbey Gate from the House gallery, referencing the location where his son, Lance Corporal Kareem Nicoy, and other U.S. service members died in a suicide bombing. Despite warnings, Nicoy's protest led to his arrest for crowding, obstructing, and incommoding. The incident highlighted the ongoing pain and controversy surrounding the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, criticized for its management and the tragic loss of American and Afghan lives. Representative Mast, honoring Kareem's memory, criticized Biden's portrayal of the withdrawal, emphasizing the need to remember those lost at Abbey Gate. And that is your update. TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you go if you want 2 bonus episodes each and every week. Now, back to the show.
Romney's a good man. He cares about 100% of Americans in this country. And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way. You can cut tax rates by 20% and still preserve these important preferences for middle-class taxpayers.
Not mathematically possible.
It is mathematically possible. It's been done before. It's precisely what we're proposing.
It has never been done before.
It's been done a couple of times, actually.
It has never been done
Jack Kennedy
done
lowered tax rates, increased growth. Ronald Reagan.
Oh, now you're Jack Kennedy.
Ronald Reagan. I know.
No, this is
Mr. Vice President,
this is
I know you're under a lot of duress to make up for lost ground. But I think people will be better served if we don't keep interrupting each other.
Well, now, don't just, take all the 4 minutes, then.
When we equivocate on our values, when we show that we're cutting our own defense, it makes us more weak. It projects weakness, and when we look weak, our adversaries are much more willing to test us. They're more brazen in their attacks, and our allies are less willing to
trust us. With all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey.
And why is that so?
Because not a single thing he said is accurate. I was in a conference call with the president, with him talking to Bibi for well over an hour in stark relief and detail about what was going on. This is a bunch of stuff. Look, here's the deal.
What does that mean, a bunch of stuff?
Well, it means it's simply inaccurate.
It's Irish.
It is. We Irish call it malarkey.
Thanks for the translation. Okay.
We Irish call it malarkey. And I love my friend here. I'm not allowed to show letters, but go on our website. He sent me 2 letters saying, by the way, can you send me some stimulus money for companies here in the state of Wisconsin? We sent millions of dollars. Any letter you send me, I'll entertain.
I appreciate that, Joe.
There we go. That was 2012, the vice presidential debate. That, let's remember where we were in time. In that moment, Obama had stumbled in that first debate, and Biden was seen as riding the ship. He interrupted Paul Ryan. He mocked Paul Ryan. To this young man watching it while it was happening back then, Biden came off as a bit of an a-hole. But there was no denying that he felt comfortable unfurling all the sharp elbows of the Senate cloakroom on the young representative. And Ryan really couldn't make him pay for it. He even explained what a bunch of stuff meant, which is like the worst possible thing that you can do. Now, of course, Obama won re-election in 2012, and I don't think a lot of people would say that that debate was the reason why he won. Joe Biden did win the presidency in 2020, and he did so on the promise of moderation, bipartisan, common sense government. You know, the way it was before Donald Trump started all the yelling. But now Joe's yelling too. It clearly delighted the dejected blues who thought fighting Joe was never to be seen again. And the question that we're going to ask ourselves over the next several months is that a sugar high? Is that something that's covering up for a lot of the issues that are actually going to decide voters' minds come November? This morning, a jobs report showed higher unemployment. Not great. The border will continue to be a problem. And while none of the squad yelled anything about Gaza during the State of the Union, that may or may not be the case for other anti-Biden forces within the Democratic Party as we go on, especially if that war either continues or Israel's conduct after the hostilities is not up to par. If Gaza becomes Vietnam and we have a very raucous convention where many of the delegates who voted for uncommitted are going to be sent there, if you can't get your ducks in a row, then it doesn't matter how loud Nancy Pelosi clapped last night. This is still going to be a major problem. It is interesting to think of who Joe Biden is to America, though. In 2020, he was the sober hand on the wheel for a panicked nation going through an international medical emergency. Last night, he was a little bit more, you know, I drive better when I've had a few. But realistically, we do live in a world of negative partisanship. If you don't have an energized base, then you really don't have a chance. Biden did have an energized base last night in that room, on Twitter, and in the media. And with that, on a settled Republican primary, we can dispense with this fiction that we are anywhere else but a rematch for the ages. It is 2020 part two. 2024 is on Trump versus Biden one more time. Politics, politics. And that'll wrap it up for us today. Politics, 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 written and hosted by me, Justin Robert Young, for Dog and Pony Show Audio in Austin, Texas. You can find, follow, and share clips of our program on TikTok, Justin R. Young, for as long as it's legal. Instagram, Justin R. Young. Politics, politics, politics is our YouTube. You can send me an email, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter, PX3Tweets, and me on Twitter, Justin R. Young. You can follow us live on Twitch, PX3Live.com, and share this podcast with your friends, family, and clergy, PX3Podcast.com. If you'd like to support the show, but you don't got the scratch to do it each and every week, well, friends, there is a way to give a one-time donation. If you got a little money in PayPal, it is paypal.me/payjury. That is P-A-Y-J-U-R-Y. Venmo, well, that money isn't real. As soon as it goes into Venmo, it becomes not real. Don't blame me. It's science. Justin-Young-20. Prove this phenomenon to yourself by sending me $5 right now. Justin-Young-20. On Cash App, I am PX3 Cash, and you can send me anything you'd like in the mail. P.O. Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. Of course, you can always get our bonus content at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 tier gets you 2 bonus podcasts per week covering all the news that we miss on our free podcasting schedule. And our $10 tier gets your name read at the end of the show, like these fine folks in our Titanic $10 tier. Sam, John, Niemeister, Edwin, Invoke Gloria Young for King of the New World Order. Brian Edison, Jeremy, A Dog Named Checker, Sarah Genie, Spider, Matthew, Dr. G, Dustin, Brad, D-Laser, Nick, Just Another Pilot, Middle-Aged Mike, You Dodging Me Montana, The Gen, Halo, D-Really, Andrew, Lisa, Fat Tony's PJs from New York, Devon, The CFP, Gloria Young, my mom, Gray Zone, Peepaw, J. Van Ord, Neil, Yield Pinball Shop, John, DP4, Bongo, Neil, His Nerdiness, Charles, Audrey Stole Adler's Spot, Darren, Idris Arslanian, Berkeley Steven, Nomadic Terran, Molly's Delightful Demeanor, Adam, Chief Andy, Robert, Casey, and Paul. You want your name read on this show? One place to go. TakePoliticsSeriously.com. And that brings us to the end of our State of the Union special. Again, apologies for the wacky schedule this week. I assume most of you guys are going to be listening to this over the weekend. I hope you have a great one. South by Southwest has kicked off here in Austin, Texas. So if you're around there, go ahead and hit me up on Twitter and maybe I'll be carousing around downtown. But until next time, this is your old pal Justin Robert Young saying that some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics. But this is the only show that dares discuss.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.